Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's the final day of 2020. A lot of people are excited about that. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and we're on the eve of the college football playoff as well. We talked a lot about that on the show yesterday. Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State. I'm gearing up for that. I'm looking forward to it. We did have some college football games take place. What about last night? Florida and Oklahoma. Who saw that coming? It's so difficult to gauge how teams are going to perform in regular bowl games. Especially when the bowl games are so close to the conference championship games. Okay, I'm not making up excuses for Florida. But I also don't think you can look at a bowl game and deem that entire conference one way or the other based on that result, if that makes sense. I will say this. Every stinking time an SEC squad loses a bowl game, it's because they were depleted or they couldn't get up for it or they had higher expectations. I'm preaching to the choir when I'm talking to Ute fans here. Every time an SEC squad loses a bowl game, this comes out. And that's why the entire country should be rooting for Notre Dame tomorrow. As far as Florida and Oklahoma is concerned, the Sooners wrecked that Florida team. Bottom line, they wrecked them. We've seen it with Notre Dame and LSU over the last couple of years. The list goes on and on and on. I mean, again, we can go all the way back to Brian Johnson and Kyle Whittingham getting the best of Nick Saban in Alabama. But what do we have to hear? Bama wasn't up for that game. That type of logic, it doesn't float around any other conference other than the SEC. And if you don't think that the media has played into that logic, you're wrong. It is. See, there's my tirade for the day. You get me started on college football, especially the SEC, and I just get angry because every time they lose a bowl game, we have to hear about it. Oklahoma was phenomenal defensively in the first quarter of this game. It completely changed everything that we thought going into it. And so I thought it was a terrific win for Oklahoma last night. Still to come, plenty of great bowl games. Tomorrow we get Georgia-Cincinnati. I'm interested in this one. 8 a.m. start time. Or no, excuse me, 10 a.m. start time. It's 10 a.m. Mountain Time, Georgia-Cincinnati. Auburn-Northwestern should be a good game, and then we'll dive into the playoffs. We did have a couple of games come to a close earlier today, one being Mississippi State and Tulsa. There was a massive post-game brawl out on the field. Mike Leach, Mississippi State, they get the win in the Armed Forces Bowl. And right now, we have Army and West Virginia going at it, and Ball State and San Jose State. Ball State actually picked up a victory earlier today. They blasted through San Jose State. That's what's really happening in the national sports front. On the show today, we're going to put heavy focus on the local scene. In fact, we're going to be joined by Coach Kurt Christiansen of the Emory Spartan Wrestling Team. He's going to join us in just a moment over the phone. We'll talk local sports, local basketball, and some NBA. The Jazz coming up tonight here on KOAL. Let's pause for just a moment. More coming up when we return.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to talk high school wrestling today on the Coach's Corner. It was a very productive night, to say the least, for the Emory Spartans. They traveled to the 3A duels at the Sevier Valley Center in Richfield. And they come back champions of the 3A duels for the very first time. Joining us to talk about that and more right now, we have Coach Kurt Christiansen. And Coach, it's always a pleasure. I know it's an exciting time to be around the wrestling program at Emory High School. So thank you very much for the time today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Coach, as you and I were just talking off of the cuff, it is history for this wrestling program. You guys go to the 3A duels and you come back a perfect 6-0, six matches, and you guys really just dominated thoroughly throughout the night, and you're 3A duel champions.
Yeah, we had a ball. The boys all wrestled really good. We had eight undefeated wrestlers on the week, and the team came out as the victors. And, you know, it was kind of bittersweet. We wanted to see Juab's varsity and Morgan again now that we've got our guys shuffled. But due to it being the holiday season and the COVID season, we missed a few teams there. But we'll take the win and wear it with a smile.
You mentioned, Coach, getting the kids shuffled as to where you want them, and as you hit New Year's, I mean, it's probably around that time, right, where you start gearing up, looking ahead as to what you guys actually have weight to weight. So maybe even more important than coming away 6-0 with the 3A duels, it's getting these kids situated and having success in their own weight class.
Yeah, it feels great to have everybody down to weight and wrestling where they want to be wrestling and having so much success. We're super excited for how we're going to do in the postseason. We've got some really big tournaments coming up in January to get us prepared for the divisionals and the state finals. So we're excited about this team.
Well, talking about the duels yesterday, Coach, and for those who are unaware, the way wrestling is working with the COVID restrictions, there's no overnight tournaments, right? So this is all taking place over the course of one day. You guys have six matches, and you just mentioned you had eight wrestlers go unbeaten. These kids are taking on six matches in one day. What a grueling test that is.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's a lot of wrestling in a day, but we... You know, it gets us prepared and in shape and ready to go.
As far as some of the individual standouts, Coach, yesterday, we can talk about some of the undefeated kids, and we'll start with the A team because you guys took two squads here. Jaron Allen, Briar Macarello, Hayes Dalton, Cove Johansson, Braden Howard, they all finish unbeaten 6-0.
Yeah, for sure. And we had a couple others just with one loss. And, you know, Byron's case, he loses to a two-time state champion. In a battle royal, you know, it was fun, and Merritt the same way. You know, Merritt Macarello at 113 for us, you know, what a stud battler he is, you know. Each of them coming out with four pins for us and then another win. So, yeah, six match was actually a bye for us. So, you know, we wrestled five on the day, and these guys were amazing. And they're amazing as a team. And then we had guys step up and wrestle for team points and just battle for those, you know, no pins. You know, we have little Monty weighing in at a whopping 92 pounds, wrestling the 106 pounders that are weighing 108 with a growth allowance now, you know. And he comes in there and wins two out of the five and never gets pinned. And he never even gave up a major decision. So he's a formidable opponent for a little fella. So, you know, our standouts are from the top to the bottom. These guys are amazing as a team. And we can't take away from what's going on with these guys who battle through and pin their way through the tournament. You know, we've got Tove who pins his way through a tournament. We've got Hayes and Grat, or excuse me, Hayes Dalton and Briar Macarello who pin everybody but one, and then the win by almost a major decision. Both of them were 7 points ahead, you know, almost a major, you know. So, you know, things are looking good for our team. We're supercharged.
Coach, before we wrap up the talk in the 3A duels, we got to talk about how it came to a conclusion. It just so happens you win the B poll. Carbon High School wins the A poll, so it's Carbon and Emory for the championship of the 3A duels. It's a team that you guys are already familiar with, and you guys kind of took control early and never really looked back.
Yeah, for sure. We've just been, you know, doing what we do and wrestling hard for every set of points. You know, our game plan is to win each battle, and then maybe we'll win the war. And it's been working really well for us. And these guys are a team in the room. They're a team on the bus, and they're a team when they get home. These guys are amazing, and there's a great atmosphere here. And I want to, you know, quickly give a big shout out to all my coaches. The ones that are in the room and the ones that have been in the room with them, you know, that this doesn't happen by accident. There's a lot of time that goes into these boys, and I want to make sure that all my coaches over the years who've ever touched one of these boys or been beat up by them, you know, I appreciate what they're doing for us.
Again, Coach Kurt Christiansen, our guest right now with the Emory Sport and Wrestling Team. Coach, I want to talk about where we're sitting now as we prepare for 2021. In the beginning of the year, you and I were talking about the kids that have state championship aspirations, the kids that it's a realistic goal for these kids. We know that Breyer is a beast. We know that Hayes Dalton, what he has accomplished already. But when you take a look at this roster front to back, how many state champion caliber wrestlers do you have now as you hit the new year?
Oh, heck, let's go through them and count them. We've got a real shot at making the finals at 113. It'll be a long shot for Monty at 106. He's just so light. We've got a real shot at it at 113 with Merritt Macarello. And my JV kid there is Sid Christiansen, who's a returning state placer as well. So we've got two, you know, maybes there. We've at 120. We just got Caden World down there. And if I get him firing right, we'll hopefully see him in the high contention for a state medal. Byron's got a real shot at it at 126. You know, the number one seed, he went 1 point with. And last night with the number two seed, he was 1 point with him, and he got caught in a throw and thrown on his back. So, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. It may go the other way for us come divisionals and state, you know. Byron's got a real shot at it. Jaron Allen and Dwayne Farley are sitting number two and number three at 132. So we'll see one or both of those in the finals at 132. At 138, Hunter is looking really good. You know, 45 now. Kelby's a little young. We're hoping for a state medal there. At 52, we're expecting Breyer to be a state champ. At 160, Ty Stilson's coming down there from 170, his weight cut's done, and he is looking strong. So, you know, he'll be a high state placer. 170, we're really expecting Maddox to be in the state finals, in the final championship there. At 182, we've got a returning state placer, Hayes Dalton. 195, Toad's a returning state placer. Anything can happen at 95 right now. Through the 3A duels, he goes undefeated. You know, his only loss at 195 is for the Morgan kid, so we're expecting Cove in the finals. Braden knocked off the number one seed with Easton last night. You know, the Carbon Easton Horsley has the number one seed there, and so we should take the number one seed there. And our JV there, Easton Thornley, who's a freshman, pinned Easton Horsley as well. So that should move us into one and two at 220. So that'll round it off. Well, I think I named off nine who should be in the finals.
Yeah, and coaches, as you're naming these kids, one of the things that stands out to me is the competition that you guys see at the 3A classification as well. I can't be overstated. 3A has always been predominantly very, very entertaining and very competitive, and you guys are right there.
Yeah, I think as far as divisions go, 3A is as competitive as any division in the state right now. We've kind of proved that in the last few weeks, wrestling with Westlake and Mountain View and Payson. You know, we're wrestling and being competitive in those dual meets with them, and with half our guys wrestling up a weight. You know, I would love to have all those duels back with my guys at weight right now. You know, I think we'd win those duels. So, you know, as far as 3A being competitive, there's no doubt that we have the respect of the state of Utah, so things are looking good.
Definitely. Coach, before I let you go, we have to talk about what's next. I know the kids will get a little break. New Year's Eve, obviously, New Year's Day right around the corner. The schedule that's up and coming for you guys, it gets pretty heavy from here on out.
Yeah, we wrestle hard. You know, we'll have a tournament and a duel most weeks from here until the division championships, and once the division championships are over with, we'll have a week break and then hit state. So no rest for the wicked.
No, not at all. Well, Coach, congratulations on your victory at the 3A duels last night. I definitely appreciate you taking out the time, and I know we'll catch up again real soon to talk more wrestling. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks again to all our coaches and fans out there. Get online and get them watched. I mean, it's tough. I wish you could all come and watch us, but there's ways online to get to see these wrestling matches. So, you know, get on the internet and support your team.
Definitely. Thank you again, Coach.
Thanks.
We're going to take a quick commercial break. We do have more high school sports talk coming up. Last night, the Emory Spartan boys basketball team, they suffered a loss to the Manti Templars. Entertaining game. Emory had a fourth quarter lead against the 3A state champs. Could not hold off a late run. We'll talk about that. Plus, we'll talk NBA basketball. It's all coming up right here on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. We continue on the local front. We just talked to Coach Kurt Christiansen. A dynamic performance from the Emory Spartan boys wrestling team last night, picking up the 3A duels championship at the Sevier Valley Center, so congratulations to those boys. Also last night on KOAL, we made the trip to Manti. The Emory Spartans and the Manti Templars going at it. Those two teams always have battles. They always deliver when they share the floor. Manti, defending 3A state champs. Emory had them on the ropes, held a four-point lead in the fourth quarter, but it was Manti that came out on top, 77-66. If you missed the broadcast, ran a little late last night, so if you missed the broadcast, we did catch up with head coach Jeff Cincinnatus. We talked about the loss. We also talked about the break and what lies ahead next week in the Region 12 opener with the Richfield Wildcats. I'm going to play that interview for you now. This is from last night, Coach Jeff Cincinnatus talking about the setback.
Joining us right now with the broadcast booth to talk about tonight's game, we have head coach Jeff Cincinnatus. And Coach, I appreciate you stopping by. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate you getting me on, Jordan.
Absolutely. Coach, it was kind of a tale of, I guess, the middle quarters and the end quarters. I mean, the team played really solid second and third. If you go back to the first and fourth, sloppy offensively, and ultimately that was the difference of the game.
Yeah, we've definitely got to start starting games better and finishing games better. And again, I'll take that on my shoulders of getting us prepared in those situations. But you just can't play two quarters or three quarters of a basketball game, and we've done that in the majority of our games. And especially first and fourth quarter, to me, are the two most important. They're all important, but you can't put yourself in a hole and then, you know, just put yourself back in a hole in the fourth quarter and expect to dig yourself out. So I thought we were tired at the end of the game, and I probably should have rotated more guys in the middle part of the game. But, you know, they're playing well, like you said, in that second and third quarter, so you kind of ride them when they're playing well. But I got to do a better job of getting some more guys time because we were definitely tired in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, as far as the fourth quarter struggles offensively, Coach, was there anything that you noticed that Manti did differently defensively, or was it pretty much just not executing?
It just wasn't executing. They didn't do anything different than they were doing, the first part of the basketball game. You know, they were being aggressive. We just weren't making cuts. We were flat-footed. We had one guy taking the ball to the basket and everybody standing around and nobody cutting to the basket. And we're not going to be successful doing that. In the second, third quarters, when a guy took the ball to the basket, we had cutters going to the lane. We found them with our head up. In the fourth quarter and the first quarter to start the game, we had guys taking the ball to the hole and we're standing out on the three-point line doing nothing. So it's just about us executing. I'm super proud of our effort. Don't get me wrong. You play the returning state champs on their floor. The final score, again, it's got a lot like the Juan Diego game. We just talked about that. It wasn't that. It was a lot closer ball game. You know, we had an opportunity to get a road win tonight, but I also think we proved if we'll do the things that I've been pressing on them in practice, playing as a group and attacking the basket with everybody, then we're going to be pretty successful. But when we go back to standing and watching one guy do something, we're not a very good basketball team.
Yeah, it almost seemed like the full-court press that Manti went to in the first quarter, they're back in that half-court set, takes about 2 minutes to finally get a shot to fall. And the Manti, I don't know if Coach Shakespeare smelled blood in the water or what, he goes to the full-court press, and that seemed to wake the kids up, Coach. They played really well once Manti instituted the full-court press.
Yeah, I thought we handled their press well in that first quarter. I'll be honest, I woke them up in a timeout because the effort I was getting out of them was never going to cut it. And if I got to go get some freshmen, more freshmen to dress and put them on the floor, I will if we're not going to give that effort to start a basketball game. But you know, again, I'm proud of our effort. I know it comes on the losing end, but I think we're teaching ourselves, you know, that we can be very successful if we'll play as a group and play hard. You know, I think we controlled the boards all game long. In the fourth quarter there, they got two or three offensive rebounds and kickouts for threes that they drilled, and those are backbreakers. And that's really what pushed the lead and pushed them ahead, was those offensive rebounds and kickout for threes. And we had done such a great job, and that's where I think we were tired, because we didn't get those rebounds and we didn't get out and close out on a shooter, and they drilled every one of them. And you just can't do that. And, you know, I talk to them. I tell them if they're tired, I need them to get themselves a breather and then put themselves back in. I know that's hard as a high school kid. You want to stay on the floor, and yeah, you feel like your effort's still better out there than sitting on the bench, and I get that, and that's where my job comes in to see the effort's not there and get some guys on the floor, because I have plenty of guys sitting on the bench who I trust and need to help us out in those situations, and they will, and I'll learn from that, and our team will learn from that, and so we'll take what we learned here tonight, and we'll get ready to start our region play.
Yeah, you and I talked about Manti and what they're capable of doing on the offensive end of the floor. They had a game where they hit 16 three-point shots. If I'm not mistaken, Coach, they were something of 2 of 8, 2 of 9 going into the break. It was somewhere around that mark. I mean, defensively, you guys did exactly what you needed to do in the first half, limiting their production from beyond the arc.
Yeah, we emphasized that of staying out and not collapsing in the paint. Again, we go to the fourth quarter, and we had guys collapsing in the paint, not getting out on shooters. And we just went away from what we had been working on and being successful. And I really think that is just tired. I mean, mentally, your brain's not focused like it should be. Physically, you're not getting to those spots. But, you know, it's a positive, even though it's a loss. And anyone knows me, I hate losing. I know our guys hate losing. You know, there's not a lot of moral victories, but there are some victories of us learning what is positive that we can work on. And when we do those things, we're pretty successful.
Let's end with a couple of positives, Coach. Bo Cook played a tremendous game, I thought, tonight. And then you go to the bench, and, I mean, you got some solid production off the pine from a couple of bigs as well. Kyson Curtis was good. Brett Rasmussen really was a game changer in that first half.
Yeah, he went to the boards hard for us. And, you know, we got him some time in a sophomore game today, and maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he needs that confidence of playing, you know, at his own level and take that to the JV and the varsity. I'm going to tell you right now, I thought Jackson stepped up and played big for us. He took the ball to the hole. I don't know what he ended up point-wise, but, you know, I talked to him in the past week and said, I need you taking the ball to the basket like you were doing in the summer, and he went and he finished. And for a guy his size to go down there and finish like he does, he's a tough kid, and I appreciate him taking what I asked him to do and putting it into a game situation, because it makes us better. And, you know, all the way around, like I said, we had good production off the bench. Bo was playing with an injured foot. I don't know what he did in the first half, but I know it was hurting him the whole game. And, you know, he's another kid. He's never gonna tell you that he's hurting, but I could tell he wasn't 100%. But his effort is unbeatable. So I'm proud of our group. I'm disappointed. I know they're going to be disappointed when I get in the locker room. And it's just something that we got to build on. And we got to take this, you know, tough loss in a tough place to play against a very good basketball team and take that into region play.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you stopping by the booth. I'll let you get into to the boys in the locker room. I know we'll catch up again with you next week. Region play on Friday against Richfield. Have a happy new year, and again, I appreciate the time.
Yeah, I appreciate all our fans that traveled. I hope they have a safe trip back, and everybody back at home have a very, you know, safe and happy new year as well. And let's look forward to better things next year.
Again, that's Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Emory Sport and Boys Basketball Team. Last night, Emory coming up short, 77-66. You can get your full recap. It's up at CastleCountryRadio.com. Great performance from Trevin Brazier and Bo Cook and Riggs Griffin, Jax Matson. It was a solid game all the way around for Emory, just unfortunately on the short end of the scoreboard. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll talk NBA basketball. The Jazz, they play tonight right here on KOAL. In fact, they play over the next two nights. We'll talk NBA basketball, some of the storylines, and more when we return.
This is Derek Favors, number 15, from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Three-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes it strong, and one. Oh, my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're going to continue on the basketball front. Let's move away from local. Let's talk national. Coming up here tonight on KOAL, the Utah Jazz will make their return. Utah right now at 2-1. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. Jazz, Suns, 7 o'clock tip-off there, and it sets the stage for what will be a very busy weekend for the Utah Jazz as well, as they start to get some games under their belts tomorrow. They'll take on the Clippers in a very intriguing matchup at 7 o'clock. You'll also be able to listen to that right here on KOAL as well. Joining us right now over the phone to talk all things NBA, we have Tom Perkins of HoopCityNews.com. Tom is an independent NBA scout and the founder of HoopCityNews.com. Tom, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Great to be here. I love doing this show. It's so much fun.
Well, it's been a little while since we've gotten you on, and now the time is here. I mean, we're 4 or 5 games deep for some teams as far as the NBA season is concerned. And, Tom, I know that you dissect, you break down, you talk to teams around the league, and so let me give you my assessment right out of the gate. The play through the first 4 games of the season has stunk. It hasn't been good basketball.
That's correct. I really agree with you with that, about that. Obviously, the very shortened off season played a part into that, and then of course them getting together for practice, so they're not really a fine-tuned type of team right now. They're everybody's still trying to get their feet and so on and so forth, and trying to learn, especially if you have a new team, a relatively new team like Lakers. They're trying to go ahead and find themselves, and that's it's a difficult proposition under these circumstances.
Yeah, Tom, when we look at some of the new faces and new places, I mean, to me, that's one of the biggest hampers of this whole season, the way it was condensed in the offseason. You had guys signing contracts with teams literally 3 to 4 weeks before they joined the squad and got to play an actual NBA game. It's asinine when you think about it. And I understand that Adam Silver's done everything that he possibly could to get things moving back as normal as possible. I mean, you had to do it, but that's the biggest transition. I mean, you look at some of these teams, there are so many new faces, and it's just not feasible to garner that type of chemistry and trust in that short period of time, and I'm sure you're seeing that.
Absolutely. I mean, you take the Lakers, for example. You know, they've almost overhauled their entire team, and one of the biggest things that's lacking with the Lakers is the rim protection. I mean, Gasol is a nice serviceable center who can do some damage in regards to offense and do some rebounding, and he passes pretty well, but he's not really a defensive stalwart. In other words, missing Howard and missing JaVale McGee is something that they really, really miss because they have no rim protection. So now a lot of the teams are exposing the Lakers because they absolutely cannot defend the pick and roll. I mean, Portland, their guards just embarrassed the Lakers the other night with the pick and roll. There's no way Harold can go ahead and figure out, should he go on top, should he go beneath the screen? And it's a mess when it comes to their pick and roll. So it seems to me like the remedy for the Lakers is that, and I know he doesn't like this, but Anthony Davis is going to have to play more center in regards to defense, because I don't think that Gasol is not quick enough to play that kind of defense.
Yeah, when I watch the Lakers, I'll tell you the biggest problem that I've assessed in the games that I have watched, and I've watched them play all 5 of their games so far, the amount of energy that they are putting forth. I mean, in the Portland game, we can talk about their inability to go to the pick and roll. We know that Montrezl Harrell, he can move around the perimeter. We understand this. This guy's lighter on his foot, not a whole lot of rim protection, but still, at the end of the day, the effort has not been there for the Lakers. I don't think anyone beats this team, Tom. I really don't. I mean, barring a massive injury, and I said this last year when they acquired Anthony Davis, nobody's going to beat this Laker team with LeBron and AD. You're just not going to beat this team in a 7-game series. They're better this year. They can beat you in more ways. Barring a major injury, this is a team that's playing with their food right now. That's what I've gotten out of the Lakers so far.
Well, you could be right, but I think there are definitely some teams that are capable of beating them. I mean, mainly the Brooklyn Nets. Even though without Dinwiddie, I mean, that team has played very well this first part of the season. So you have to consider them. You know, the Clippers are still pretty doggone good when they have all hands on deck. And when Paul George has Kawhi Leonard, it's apparent to me that without Kawhi Leonard, Paul George goes into the tank. It's just too much for him to carry a team by himself, and he should be able to do that for a game or two. So if they have all hands on deck and Kawhi Leonard's playing and everybody's playing, they can definitely give the Lakers a run for their money. And in the meantime, you know, people like Utah could do something with them. Denver could certainly do something with them. I don't think they necessarily could say they would could beat them. It's possible, but it's not necessarily a slam dunk that Lakers are going to go ahead and move through all the way to their 18th ring.
Yeah, you and I will have conversations, I know, throughout the entire year. I will make that bold prediction right now. Nobody beats this team. Barring a massive injury to LeBron or AD, I just don't see it, Tom. I look at the way, and again, they have arguably their best point guard since, my gosh, we'd have to go a long ways back, a prime Derek Fisher and Dennis Schroeder. That's how long it's been since the Lakers have had a competent point guard. I'm not talking about Gasol and Kobe Fisher. I'm talking about Shaq and Kobe Fisher. That's almost 20 years. They finally have a point guard, and they better lock up Dennis Schroeder relatively soon, because I think when you watch this team play, even in the loss to Portland, he was really the one bright spot.
Yeah, well, definitely a bright spot. But another bright spot that came up last night, I think he's battling some injuries, is Wes Matthews. Him hitting 6-for-6 from the three, that's unheard of, and that's something they don't even expect from him. They expect a tough defense, which, of course, he can give them the perimeter defense, and he's also more capable of defending the pick and roll. But the big thing with him is that he can offer some offense along with that defense, and now they have two defensive stalwarts that can defend the perimeter, Schroeder and Wes Matthews. So if Wes Matthews continues to develop, he's going to be something to handle. Boy, so yeah, the Lakers certainly on paper, they're on paper, no one can beat them. But again, it's a long season.
Oh, it is.
We've got about 68 games more to go.
Yeah. That's correct. That's correct. Again, Tom Perkins, our guest right now of HoopCityNews.com. Tom, let's talk Eastern Conference. And what are the best surprises so far? And again, you just mentioned it. There's still 68 games to go. So you don't ever want to overreact. You don't ever want to become a prisoner of the moment. But looking at the standings and seeing the Orlando Magic at 4-0, well, it's got to put a smile on just about any NBA fan's face. I mean, we're talking about Terrence Ross, who is leading the team in scoring off of the bench. He's averaging 21, has not started a single game so far this year for the Magic. Vucevic, who we know is very, very good. I mean, he has been for a long time. He's averaging 20 points a game. Markelle Fultz, it's great to see him get some success. He gets wrapped up in a contract. He's averaging about 18 a game, and that's what everyone expected when he came out of Washington. Evan Fournier's been great. Aaron Gordon's been good. I mean, when you look at this Orlando Magic team, yes, 4-0 looks great, but when you dig into what they've actually accomplished, it looks pretty good.
It does look pretty good. Well, you know, Nikola Vucevic, he's really come up big this year so far. And, of course, Markelle Fultz getting his, I don't know, fifth chance of trying to make it is really coming around. Aaron Gordon has always been very good, and he's always been very steady. So they've got pieces that fit very nicely. In other words, they complement each other really nicely in regards to position by position, and that chemistry is really working for them. So that's a surprise in a way, but in a way it's not. And I bet you when you go to the Orlando Magic locker room, you can feel the cohesiveness, because that's important, as you know. The cohesiveness of any team is way important.
Again, Tom Perkins, our guest right now. Tom, if we look at the Eastern Conference in general, it's a conference that we pay attention to, but not as much here in the state of Utah, obviously, with everything that's happening with the Utah Jazz. You had mentioned the Brooklyn Nets, and I know it's an exciting team. It's something that's going to take some time to really gel, just because we don't know how often we're going to see Kyrie and KD out on the court early on. The Nets so far this year, 3-2. What stood out to you with this team?
Well, what stood out to me is recovery of KD. Kevin Durant has done an amazing job in recovering, and I look at a couple of things about that. In the first game, he made two drives on the baseline and finished with a dunk. Now, usually when people come back from an Achilles injury like that, they're very hesitant to make that move. He wasn't. he was fluid all the way through and finished strong. And, you know, when you make a dunk like that, you're pretty high up, and you got to come down pretty hard. Well, he had no problem with that. And he made several other fluid movements that showed me he is probably fully repaired in the Achilles. So I don't know. It seems to me like whatever doctor, you know, did surgery on him did a great job, because he is, like, really playing well. So that's the thing that stands out to me, how far he's come. And, of course, Kyrie Irving is very effective along with him, and Kyrie Irving knows when to give that ball to him, because he does not demand the ball as much as Kyrie Irving does. So that works out fine. So, you know, with the exception of Dinwiddie going down, yeah, they've got a pretty solid team. And, you know, it's pretty interesting that, you know, they've got D'Antoni as an assistant coach on that bench.
Yeah, that's a great point. Tom, if we jump back over to the Western Conference, we have to talk about the Utah Jazz, 2-1 so far this season. The Jazz will have an opportunity to really make some headway in the Western Conference. Again, most teams have played four or five games. The Jazz right now just three. But looking at the small sample size that we have seen from this squad, they look good. They look better than they looked last year. I still worry a little bit about the potency coming off of the bench. That's been my big concern. Having Bogdanovich back definitely helps. It gives you a little bit more depth. But in my mind, that's still my biggest worry with the Utah Jazz. Do you have a deep enough rotation offensively? But by the time we get to the playoffs and the rotation tightens to 9, 8, maybe even 10 at the absolute most, can this team compete with some of the stalwarts in the Western Conference? And I'm still just not sold on a depth perspective.
Yeah, they probably don't have as much depth as they need. But boy, their starters and their first couple of guys off the bench, they're pretty good. So I'd say the first seven guys are pretty solid. I mean, you know, even Joe Ingles can come in and have a really super game. Of course, the fact that they re-signed Rudy Gobert, which is important. I mean, he got the max there, and that's actually he got a little bit less than the max.
Yeah, discount. Yeah, he gave him a discount, about $35 million, I believe. He could have gotten 240, signs for 205, so we did give him a tad bit of a discount.
Yeah, just a little discount, and the thing is, it makes everybody around him feel good. It makes the management feel good about him. Everybody loves Rudy. And of course, he's having a stellar season at 14 rebounds a game. That's pretty awesome. So he's going to continue to improve. And, of course, you know, you've got this super-duper-duper guy, Donovan Mitchell, and he's going to be he's going to improve for the next several years. So, yeah, they've got a team that could beat other really good teams, as long as they don't get into major foul trouble, and as long as they do not have a guy go down in injury.
Tom, as far as the weekend is concerned, is there a specific game, a specific aspect of the league that you're going to be paying attention to? Because we talked about the quality, and we talked about some of the blowouts, and you know, it's hit or miss on if you're going to get a great basketball game or not. What are you watching this weekend?
Well, you know, yeah, it's always a good thing to watch Phoenix Suns, because you know, they got a new construction of a team, and they're playing pretty well, too. So watching the Phoenix Suns, watching the Clippers, and of course, continue to watch the Brooklyn Nets and Milwaukee. Those are the teams that I'm kind of interested in right now. Milwaukee is still not, they're still not convincing me that they're the best. I mean, now a lot of people are saying, was Giannis really the MVP 2 years in a row? Maybe not. But the thing about it is, Phoenix, L.A., and Brooklyn, and Milwaukee are the teams to watch in the next several days, all the way to, January 6th, which is next Wednesday. So those are the teams I'm looking to watch. Clippers, of course, they play well, and everybody's all hands are on deck. And Paul George does not feel any pressure. When he doesn't feel any pressure, he comes through. But Phoenix is very interesting from the standpoint of, you know, they've got Chris Paul now, you know, who's a real legitimate Hall of Fame leader. And that's the important thing. He's such a leader, and he can make that thing go. And, of course, you know, Devin Booker can score lights out. they got the DeAndre Ayton, which was their number one draft choice a couple of years ago, and he's playing real well. He's playing like a 7-footer. Jay Crowder is also developing in a real good complement off the bench. So, yeah, that's a team to watch and see if they can make some noise. Look, a lot of times these teams that have young players, as the season goes along, they either develop nicely or they drop off. They hit that rookie wall, or there's an injury or this or that, or there's some kind of team chemistry problem, and suddenly they're not the same team as they were in the beginning. But right now, the Phoenix Suns are on the up. They're coming on the way up, and that's really good to see.
Tom Perkins again of HoopCityNews.com. Tom, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, of course, let the listeners know about HoopCityNews.com.
Well, you know, we write articles every week, and, you know, I talked about the free agency. I talked about the NBA draft. Talked about those players that have to redeem themselves for having a poor season last season. And, you know, who won the free agency, and which, of course, is the Lakers. But, so, yeah, keep reading those things. And I've condensed my articles. Instead of having to read War and Peace, which takes about, I don't know, 2 weeks to read, I'm making these things 2 to 3 minute reads. So everybody out there, you're not going to be bogged down with having to read a long, long piece. Every now and then I'll throw a long, long piece in there for those purists. But for the most part, I keep it very condensed and right to the point.
Tom, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time once again. I know we'll do it again soon. Have a terrific New Year's, and we'll talk in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Love being here.
We're out of time with this edition of Drive Time Sports. I want to thank Tom Perkins, Coach Kirk Christiansen. I'm out of here for the day. Tomorrow, the best of Drive Time Sports, so I will catch you on Monday. Have a very safe New Year's Eve, and we'll talk to you then. Be safe. I am out.